Vietnam's rice shortage is just one aspect of the worldwide food crisis. One of its causes is growing demand for rice and food of all kinds from Asia's emerging economies. For example, China has overtaken the U.S. as a consumer of grain and meat. It's just one of the dramatic changes that has occurred in China over the past 20 years. The National Geographic has devoted an entire issue to China's rise. The lead and concluding articles are written by Peter Hessler. Hessler writes about the factory towns that are springing up on former farmland all over China.
The sense you get visiting these places is the incredible entrepreneurial energy. So when you watch this landscape develop, you know, the first thing that you notice are these construction workers, of course, everywhere. And then there's a bunch of businesses that come in to serve the construction workers. You have people selling food and small restaurants. And then you have the mobile phone shops very early. You know, and then after that, you know, you start to have the factories develop, and then you have a little shop that's selling clothes for factory workers and uniforms, and it's all very focused on the business.
The way you describe these factory towns, it sounds very much like an anything-goes mentality, kind of rules in these places. What was the starkest example for you as you went around of that?
Well, it's true. You know, you have very little sense of authority. I mean, it's very rare to see a cop or to see a government official. You know, you spend a lot of time in these places, and I was there for 19 months. I'd go about, you know, pretty much every month I'd make a trip down to this town and sort of watch how it was developing.
What town was that?
You know, it's amazing. This was Lishui. It's in Zhejiang Province in the southeast of China. And so I made repeated trips to track this experience. And actually, for me, I mean, the first thing that I noticed personally in my experience when I started to notice authority was when I began to get speeding tickets every trip from automated cameras. There's never any cops on the road.
Oh, so a cop doesn't actually, like, follow you down and gives you a ticket?
No, you never see a cop on the road in China. I mean, it's an amazing thing. I mean, you know, this is supposed to be a police state, you know, but I've driven a lot in China, and there's basically no road police. But they do have these cameras set up, and suddenly I started to get tickets. I mean, sometimes I was getting 3 tickets in a day sometimes. And people told me, oh, they say, yeah, you know, the local cops can invest in speed trap cameras. So if you're a cop working in a city and you want to get some income on the side, then you invest in a camera, and you're going to get, you know, so I think they were getting 6% off the profits from the tickets.
I mean, are there any rules for people who are in positions of authority there?
There's tons of rules. Of course, this is China. It's a communist state, and there's lots of rules. It's just a question of, you know, how many of them are followed and what situations there are followed. At some level, it is actually a coherent system because it continues to develop. I mean, this is true of corruption, right? I mean, if corruption reaches a certain point, then it strangles the economy. China's obviously not there. You know, in some ways, it's created an environment where people are really aggressive entrepreneurs. They're very sharp. But you're missing a lot when this happens. You know, and I was really struck after doing this project. I started reading about American history, and I began to read about, you know, the big development of American frontier towns and, you know, the expansion across the West. You know, everybody would come from Europe and they'd say, oh, it's amazing. You go to America and they build a town and, you know, in a matter of a month or so. And it's sort of familiar to China. But then you look at, well, what were the first things when they described these towns? What would develop? And well, one of the first things was always a newspaper. You'd also have a church quite early. You know, you'd often have a courthouse very early in a region. You know, these are sort of non-business institutions, you know, and they provide some sense of community. And I really feel that lacking when I'm in these fledgling factory towns in China.
There's a really telling line in one of your essays. You write, it's hard to imagine another place where people are more willing to work. And maybe that accounts for some of the boom there, but it's ironic. You know, Karl Marx never anticipated a country where people love to work. I mean, those theories were based on the idea that going to work stinks and it's more fun to go to a soccer game or drink a beer. Can the Chinese decompress?
I think there's a lot of history to this. I mean, a lot of it has to do with what they went through, you know, throughout most of the 20th century and during the communist years in particular. You know, there was a very difficult period. People were very poor. They had very little opportunity as entrepreneurs. And then suddenly it opened up. And so you have a population of people who were really taught what it's like to be poor. They appreciate opportunity. And then once they are given the opportunity, they're fearless. Of course, the problem with this is that it also conditions you not to take a long-term perspective. And people in China and the government in China tends to be very short-term oriented. You cannot worry about tomorrow. And this can be very good in some respects. And I think this is why they're so fearless as business people. But it can be a real negative in other respects, I think particularly with, you know, environmental issues.
Journalist Peter Hessler wrote two of the essays on China in the May issue of National Geographic. Select photographs from the articles can be seen at theworld.org. Peter Hessler, thank you very much.
Thank you.